This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. There's been a fair amount of reporting about so-called forever chemicals in drinking water and the potential health impact this family of PFAS chemicals can have, including some cancers, immune system suppression, and developmental issues in children. The state of Delaware took legislative action this year to make people more aware when PFAS levels in their drinking water exceed strict health limits initially set by the EPA during the Biden administration. But how aware are people of these chemicals, the threat they pose, and what can be done to address that threat? A recent DENREC survey indicates there's still work to be done. And earlier this week, I sat down with DENREC Chief Communications Officer Nikki Lavoie and DENREC Division of Waste and Hazardous Substances Hydrologist Todd Kaiser to discuss the survey results and the state's ongoing efforts to address PFAS. Nikki, let's start with you and the survey results. Only about a third of residents, 33%, say they're confident or think they know what PFAS are. Nearly half, 45%, have never heard of PFAS. How do you characterize that? Surprising, disappointing, concerning? What does that say to you?
Yeah, so I think it probably wasn't very surprising. It probably affirmed what we already know in comparison to a national survey. Delaware survey shows a very similar never heard share, that 45%. What's good news in Delaware is we have a larger informed segment. 18% think they know, or 16% are confident, for a combined of about 33%, or one in three point people in Delaware think they know what PFAS is. But it does certainly tell us that share that doesn't or isn't familiar with PFAS, it tells us that we have more work to do to help them be informed.
One bright spot is that those who are aware that these chemicals do seem to do things to kind of protect themselves. About 27% of respondents say they already use filtered or bottled water due to PFAS concerns. 26 have replaced or stopped using non-stick cookware because they use these materials. Does that give you some confidence that if you do build awareness, if you can push that 33% number up, that people will take action, do things to protect themselves?
Yeah, despite low awareness overall, a substantial number of Delawareans who do know about PFAS have started changing behavior to reduce their exposure. You cited a couple of those examples, like stopping using nonstick cookware, et cetera. There is a segment of the population that we surveyed who said, even if they know more about it, they're not going to change their behavior. But I think the best that we can do as government and health experts is to make sure that they have information so that they can make choices that's right for them and their families.
Do you feel, Nikki, that if they maybe learned more, maybe they would change their mind about it? Maybe that they're not worried about it because they just don't know enough about it?
Yeah, I think residents have told us that if they have the information and it's accurate and it's clear, that they will make changes in their behavior. They also told us what kind of information they would prefer to get. So they told us that they favor factual, easy to read materials such as newsletters and fact sheets, website articles, things that they can refer back to or that they can hold on to, as opposed to, say, community meetings, which still have value. But in terms of getting that information out, they told us how they want to receive that information.
So one thing that is happening is DENREC and DHSS are beginning a new grant program to support community outreach and awareness about PFAS using some of the Delaware PFAS settlement funds. Can you tell us a little bit more about what those grants will fund, what the goals are of that grant program?
Tom, it's a great question. We just offered through a webinar last week the initial information on what we intend to do. A lot of it kind of builds on what we learned from the survey, is that there are opportunities to teach, to share what we've been learning through time. And we recognize that so much of the PFAS topic is not something the agencies can take on alone. So we're offering this grant to locations, community groups, not-for-profits, to help build that capacity for sharing information, some of which we'll be able to provide, some of which we expect these smaller groups to be able to share in the community. The concept of being able to share complex science as a trusted advisor, as a trusted agency, we want to partner with those who are already trusted in the community, work with them, share this information, and build that resilience so people can make decisions, to Nikki's point, in their own home for themselves.
There's also legislation, SB 72, that was passed by lawmakers this year. It requires DPH, Division of Public Health, to create a website informing users of public water systems that exceed maximum contaminant limits for six kinds of PFAS. Also requires DPH to notify utilities if any chemicals are found at or above limits in public water systems. Todd, is making people aware of that tool part of the process too, that people have that tool in their toolbox to understand, at least in terms of drinking water, what kind of PFAS risks they may face?
Well, Tom, it's part of this tool set that we do have, simply because not everyone receives their drinking water from a public water utility, from a system, from a town. Mm-hmm. A lot of us in the state rely on our own private wells, our own selves, to understand what's in our drinking water. So the SB 72 initiative is to ensure that when community systems know, when drinking water systems know, that they share that information. And again, it's that concept of individual homeowners that receive water from a drinking water system can then make decisions for themselves. Do we need to put filtration in place? Noting that SB 72 is informational and essentially voluntary at this point, the regulatory thresholds that you mentioned, the MCLs, don't come into play for compliance, i.e. the water utilities must meet, for several years. Mm-hmm. However, again, sharing of information, the things that we've learned through our survey, what we'd like to help promote through our grant, and then SB 72, we're building a knowledge base among our citizens to allow them to make good decisions for themselves or to advocate on behalf of themselves for more rapid changes and more information.
I do want to stick with the water utilities for a moment, because obviously that website's going to require sampling, testing to find out what the levels are. Can you give us kind of a sense of just where Delaware is at in terms of sampling and testing and what we do and don't know about PFAS levels currently in the state?
It's a very, very big question. Not something that can be answered quite quickly. I think it's probably best to get that information from the Office of Drinking Water over in Public Health. As you may note, we did sample the aquifer or raw water in several locations in 2021 and 2022, published that and provided a bunch of statistics through that report, basically saying we're kind of in alignment nationally that there are places where there are PFAS present. Some of those locations are above what will become the regulatory thresholds in a few years. But overall, our survey did show that in places where we kind of knew already it was there, we confirmed it. Some other places, there was new information brought to light that through multiple programs offered by DENREC and the Department of Public Health, opportunities are in place now to start to mitigate those issues well before it becomes a regulatory compliance thing. Both agencies always look at this from the perspective of health and how do we start moving towards healthy communities and healthy citizens well before regulations say so.
I am curious because, I mean, we have seen some water utilities and municipalities already working on mitigation efforts on their end. And do you feel that they're on track to provide the kind of frontline mitigation that's needed going forward? Again, you said the compliance part isn't necessarily happening now. It's going to be a few years down the road. But is it a good sign that some of these utilities and municipalities are getting out ahead of it?
Absolutely, Tom. They know it's a challenge. We're there with them through the challenge. The fact that we did our sampling well before regulations were kicked into gear gave a lot of places a knowledge base they wouldn't have had before. So again, some of these solutions here take time, and they involve some engineering, some feasibility studies, some guidance, and partnering with technical partners. So we and DHSS have been reaching out to the communities where we know we have data, shared it with them, and developed partnerships. Again, this is not going to be a challenge that we can solve in a couple of years. This will take some time, but we're started on that now. That's the best place we can be, is moving towards solutions.
You mentioned wells earlier. Should people who use wells be proactive in seeking testing or checking on what's going on in their own backyard?
Through our previous investigations where we have detected PFAS in groundwater at either a site that's being overseen through the Hazardous Substance Cleanup Act, through our previous public water system sampling, in those areas we've stepped out and sampled proximal private wells to see if they're also impacted. The challenge of PFAS is it does flow pretty readily through groundwater in the environment. So we have an ongoing effort to sample private wells in targeted areas of concern. As we move forward in the projects, we recognize that we don't know where all of the target areas will be. So that will be expanding in short term. We'll be offering that up more broadly in the next calendar year.
What have we learned from areas in Delaware that have seen issues with PFAS in the past? Places like Blades, around the Dover Air Force Base. Have we kind of developed some best practices to respond to issues that we do see?
Absolutely. Whenever we have a detection of concern above these low regulatory thresholds that we've developed as our action levels, our non-regulatory response levels. We'll step into a community, we'll offer public meetings, we'll inform people about PFAS, let them know why it is a concern and why we want to sample their wells through an offering. When people reach back, we can also offer short-term mitigation to those issues, recognizing that sometimes these are isolated smaller areas and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're broader scale topics. Within that, our best practice has been to then step into the concept of a feasibility study. What options do we have? Treatment in the home for the entire home, potential. Is it making sense to put a deeper well in or look at that option as a potential solution for that area? Interconnection to existing public water systems that then have the responsibility to make sure the water served is clean. We evaluate all of those from a logistical and cost standpoint and then make technical recommendations. So for smaller communities that are on private wells or for public systems that are looking at how to address their pending responsibility through pending regulations to treat for PFAS.
Nikki, is there a sense that you guys will go back and resurvey people? And I guess, is there goals of what you'd like to see these numbers look like when you go back out and talk to people again and see, you know, what kind of impact these various efforts have had?
So this survey really gives us valuable insight into what Delawareans know and what they want to know about PFAS. It shows that people really care deeply about clean water and their health, but they need clear, consistent, science-based information to understand where PFAS comes from and how we're working to reduce exposure. We really do hope that this is a baseline survey to help us guide future communications and outreach about PFAS and what we should do. And, you know, in the future, we'll be able to do it again and hopefully see some of those numbers change, particularly their awareness of what PFAS is.
Thanks to DENREC Chief Communications Officer Nikki Lavoie and DENREC Division of Waste and Hazardous Substances Hydrologist Todd Kaiser for joining us on The Green this week. Up next, Arts Playlist, where we look ahead to an Opera Delaware event that puts a competitive twist on performing opera pieces. That's next on The Green, here on Delaware Public Media.